Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt, and hello, dear listener. Welcome back to another episode, the 24th episode. Oh, we've got a whole bunch of fun guitar things to talk about. We're both getting new bits and bobs this week, so
it's bad. I mean, we're bad in the sense that I'm just about to put my house up for sale, and I need as much free space as here as possible.
Wow.
And I'm already like, well, there's two things. One, I'm like, you know, I need the space, so better not buy anything. And two, it's like, when I sell my house, I'll have money. And when I have money, I can buy more stuff. Already plotting out what a potential... part of the reason for moving house is so we can have an extra bedroom, at least one extra bedroom, so I can actually have an office of some sort.
Well, exactly. And if you're going to have that extra bedroom, you need the stuff to fit in that extra bedroom.
Exactly.
So why not factor a little budget into the money you'll get for selling a house in bang in the middle of London, and you know, get yourself some cool new things. What do you think you would buy? If you could factor in like a real treat, that's a lot of money, but that's not a lot of money when you're considering that it's a household. So it would be a fraction off of the house, but it would be a premium thing to invest in if you were just buying it. I've put you on the spot.
Yeah, you have. And I guess if I was allowed, because, you know, we might want to, like, decorate the house and that. I've decorated by putting guitars on the wall. I would really love to buy like a quote unquote dream guitar. I mean, it would be great to buy like a White Penguin or something, a reissue one, not an original one.
You wouldn't go for something vintage?
Or a White Falcon, because I did go and watch the Red Hot Chili Peppers at the weekend, and yes, he played his White Falcon, and I was like, yep. That's why I've always wanted a White Falcon. I tell you what, I mean, whether you're a fan or not, it was. I guess what made the show good was that they obviously don't play to track, and it is just like it's three Marshall amps and three Galleon and Kruger like 8x10s.
Yeah,
just
he still uses those like RB750s or whatever. Like, I'm not even sure they make the head that he uses anymore.
Yeah, and it was just loud. I mean, John Frusciante is basically, his main sound is a DS2 into three Marshalls. and it's just like, it just sounds like the feedback in him. It's just like, it just sounds amazing. And that's the first stadium gig I've been to in a very, very long time. And,
where was it?
It was London Stadium, which is it was the stadium they built for the Olympics. It's the West Ham football stadium now. But yeah, it was a great gig, and lots of just great noisy guitar sounds. They pulled out a couple of sort of rarities out of the bag for the gig, which was good. So, yeah, it was, you know, 17 years after John Frusciante left the band, finally get to see him play again.
Is he playing any of the stuff that he didn't perform on?
No.
They're not writing the previous... I was thinking, he is not the sort of fella to play someone else's guitar lines.
No, they basically... Yeah, they did nothing. So far this tour, they've done nothing off I'm With You or The Getaway, which were the last two records, which admittedly I didn't listen to either because I was like, you know, Josh, great guy and, you know, interesting player and crazy pedal board. But when you grow up with a band with a specific lineup, I think it's always so difficult to, like, I don't know, replace it in some ways, especially when that band had been around for so long.
And it's a very, whatever you think of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, it's a very specific tone that John Frusciante has.
Absolutely. I mean, they don't do anything. I mean, with Josh Klinghoff, they were doing stuff off One Hot Minute. They were doing like Aeroplane.
Oh, really?
Stuff.
I was going to say, I wonder if the Dave Navarro stuff ever sees the light of day anymore.
No, not anymore. Everything they've done now has been, you know, really like. Well, I mean, saying that, they did one track off like Mother's Milk, which is like 89, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, a few classics off Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Californication, by the way, and some of the new record. It was good. It was a good mixed bag of stuff. And again, it was interesting to see like really like young kids who've obviously just got into the band and also like people my age and much older being like, yeah.
Yeah, I bet there was a real broad range of people at a show like that.
It kind of made me feel old because everyone else there was old, but also clearly the same age as me.
Yes.
Did
the Rosewood Necked Sunburst Bound Telecaster come out? I always really loved that guitar. I always thought it sounded so specific, so bright, so in your face, even in comparison to, obviously, the Strat, his essential tone. It just, I don't know, had a thing, had something about it.
He, so, played the telly. So, yeah, the bound sunburst telly. Then
both of his Strats. He's got his two sunburst Strats, one maple, one rosewood.
Yeah, which I think he played both, if I remember rightly. Mm-hmm. And then the White Falcon.
Yeah.
As well, for a bit of it. So, yeah, it was just a good mix. But, yeah, the amps are just his, you know, what he's always used. And it was those three Marshalls, Marshall Major and then two Marshall Jubilee and a Marshall Major and then like a JMP. Yeah,
extremely cool.
Just wicked. Just a great all-round.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Guitar sound. And when you hear it in a stadium, you're just like, man, just sounds just monstrous.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
What about Flea? Was he just using his Fenders?
Yeah.
Because I think what obviously happened is Flea, Fender released the very popular like road worn style shell pink 62 stack knob jazz bass, which of course is great for some of Flea's stuff, but certainly when you're talking about the older stuff, they're so reliant on that Music Man Stingray tone. I know it wasn't a Stingray, it was I can't remember the name of the brand that he moved to after that. But it was always
Modulus.
Modulus, thank you. That was
My mate's actually got a Modulus flea base.
Somebody's got one as well.
He got it when he was 18. His mum custom ordered it from America.
Graphite
neck. Yeah. It's pretty. and it's in the green as well.
It was. They were all sparkle finishes, weren't they? Sparkle blue, sparkle green.
Yeah,
I can't remember what the other color was. There was a third one, but of course they're big, active Music Man style pickup in the bridge on those Modulus and the Stingrays that he started on. You definitely can't get that tone with a passive, like low output single coil pickup jazz bass. And of course, when he's doing these sort of stadium shows, which are all the Chili Peppers are going to do, he's going to need to do old stuff as well as new stuff. So I think that's how the second Fender, I'm imagining that's how the second Fender signature model came out, which is, of course, a jazz bass, but completely plateless. And it has an active Music Man style humbucker in the bridge. And they did that in like Shell Pink and Gold, I think, as well.
Yeah, I think he basically played he played the active jazz, one pickup active jazz, the whole thing. He's got like a grey one or like a silver one.
Oh yes,
with a sticker on it, and I think that is
like a gold. It's like one of those. It is silver, but I think it's some sort of silver with like a, the undercoat that actually makes it technically a gold. I don't forget what I'm saying.
I'm just trying to find a picture of it. Yeah, it's got
silver or something.
Yeah,
like
it's got one sticker on it in the on the sort of like upper horn. He's playing that, not playing the Shell Pink bass or anything like that.
No.
As far as I'm aware, I can't remember seeing anything else of on that. And then while searching for pictures, also reminded me of those basically Behringer basses they released at one point. Do you remember them?
The flea basses. I can't remember. Were they just called flea bass?
I think they were just called flea bass, yeah.
Oh, dear listener, if you've got to look up flea bass, if you've never seen these before, they were a bit like Music Man Stingrays in shape, and they certainly had that circular sort of oval scratch plate, as it were, and the big humbucker in the bridge. But the finish options were bonkers, and they all had names. So they did a finish that was called, like, Punk or something like that, and the punk one would be slime green with a pink scratch plate, and they'd do others that would be blue with a yellow plate, but they all had a name that was sort of in line with the color combos. But it was they were pretty bad.
This so his bass, it's like Inca silver, one pickup, and then it's got flea in like cursive writing across the fretboard as well.
Oh, really? Oh, right. Wow.
But yeah, that was, again, a pretty straightforward setup for that. The only thing I was surprised by is they kept the keyboard player. So they had a keyboard player for a couple of bits. He just played, like, I guess, like a couple of, like, backing bits fill things out a little bit
the
more.
The thing with them is, on record, a lot of their backing bits are done with harmonies, with vocal harmonies. They fill out a lot of the space with that, which... they're not the greatest singers in the world, and certainly relying on that fully live isn't going to be a great idea for thickening out the sound. I imagine the keys player's there to do a lot of that.
Yeah, and actually that made me think that if you haven't listened to the new record, if anyone's out there and interested in listening, there was a great interview that I watched on YouTube with the guy that engineered and mixed some of it. And loads of the guitar stuff is run through a modular synthesizer.
Really?
So, yeah, John Frusciante is like massively into modular synthesis, which is obviously all over his solo stuff. But, yeah, loads of the guitar parts are run through a modular synthesizer. So they'd like record... He said at one track they recorded an acoustic guitar, and then he was just like, I'm going to like just patch it through the modular, and the whole acoustic guitar runs through... A modular.
That sounds exactly the sort of madness that's what, I think makes Frusciante very good.
Yeah, the guy's amazing.
He's absolutely
brilliant.
And talking on a link to John Frusciante, as he's someone who guest guitared on a couple of their records, the Mars Volta, my favourite band on the entire planet, are back.
This is big news, Joe. This is big news for Volta fans everywhere.
Absolutely, it's been a long old time. The first single in 10 years they've just released, which is called Black Light Shine, which is wonderful. It's an 11-minute video. The song itself is 2 minutes, and the rest of it is just an like an acoustic percussion band, like a traditional Spanish percussion band, which, perfect. That's exactly what I want from the Mars Volta. I want them to just release weird stuff, like the non-predictable stuff. They're like, yeah, here's this thing. And it's just like a light ballad as well. I love that they've just done something completely different, although it does feel like a nice evolution of Nocturnica, at which point Omar Rodriguez Lopez, the guitarist, was leaning so much more into modulation than he was drives. And again, with this, there's just lovely examples of a sort of gorgeous vibrato and like cocked wah, and I'm very excited to see what happens next. Of course, a new lineup for the Mars Volta.
I mean, that's obviously, you know, friend of ours, Mr. Juan Alderete, obviously, probably unfortunately not going to be able to play while he, you know, goes through his extended recovery. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they play this one, really, isn't it? It's going to be, I'm excited. I'm nervous, you know, as with any band that takes the kind of that sort of time off and then sort of comes back. You're like, what's it going to be like?
We'll see. Well, we've got Eva Gardner returning to bass, which is super cool. She was the bass player on their first EP. So that's cool to have her back. And it's a brand new drummer. I don't know the drummer. I can't remember his name right now, but Rodriguez is in his surname, so I imagine it's another sort of cousin of Omar's, as he seems to get more brothers and cousins and family members in this band as the years have gone by. But we'll see. It's a good time, you know. It will be more new, exciting, weird guitar music. So I'm in.
I think it's going to be. Cedric's looking odd though. In some ways, he's sort of. You know, to be fair, they were both, you know, I think skinny is an understatement. Like, they were just, like, non-existent, you know, like Flat Stanley. They turn one way and they just disappear. So, you know, I would say a more healthy stature. Yeah. But just with his hair and his beard, he's sort of looking like someone's dad in some ways. But, yeah, I think it's going to be... it's going to be interesting to see what they come out with. I kind of hope in some ways there's some sort of, like, I don't know if consistency is the right word, but, you know, obviously some of the later stuff really went all out there, and you're like, I guess even with the like CD release compared to like the vinyl release, it's obviously got lots of just like loads of extra noise and stuff, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And like, especially when you listen to, Francis the Mute, I remember putting that on the other day. I was like, I don't remember all this like other stuff like in between tracks.
Yeah, sure. It's like an hour and 20 minute album, Francis the Mute, and I think there is about 40 minutes of songs.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but yeah, no, I'm excited to see what happens as well. Excited for the gear, because obviously the last time they ever went through, you know, you forget that 10 years ago, sort of the birth of YouTube, people weren't doing rig rundowns and the such at that point. I think the last one, he was, Omar was just using an M9.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 Native Instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive, and as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
He had a very stripped back board. I think the most recent Rig Rundown style thing was when he was playing with Bosnian Rainbows, which is when he had his second Ibanez signature model, which never got to production, and it was a super short scale single cut, like bolt on single cut, that kind of looked it was actually an adaptive version of a very old Ibanez, but it looked a bit like a Melody Maker or a Junior, that style of thing, the humbucker in the bridge, and he used to string that with like 13 gauge flat wounds, and it had a neck as thick as a baseball bat, I remember him describing it as. So he had that, and of course now this will be the first time that he's moved to the Mariposa. We're going to see that live, the Music Man Mariposa, his signature model with them.
Mm.
It's going to be great to actually see that get a proper outing, because, of course, it has some interesting things. Dual humbuckers, but with two volume controls, rather than there's no three-way selector or anything on there. You've just got two independent volume controls for blending up the two pickups. So I'm interested to hear what he does with that. We'll see.
When did the I've just found this article of Mars Volta's Omar Rodriguez on his ongoing battle with guitar playing and love of effects from 2010. I'm like, wait, he's playing the Mariposa there, and I'm like, no, he's playing a Saint Vincent. I've just clocked it,
because he started playing Mustangs for a bit, and then that was, you know, the first time he'd really moved to that sort of that type of more modern guitar, I guess, less quirky and old school guitar.
Mm.
And then he started playing those St. Vincents, which, to be honest, shortly before is when, even though we couldn't talk about it at the time, is when Music Man showed us the prototype.
Yeah.
Like the body, the first body, where they were still making notes on the body itself of the Music Man Mariposa for Omar Rodriguez. In fact, I think at that time he was coming back to them with so many changes and alterations that they were saying, we honestly don't know if this is going to get off the ground.
Yeah.
Because he is, I assume, as fussy with his signature model as he is with his music.
I'm just looking through some pictures and just found him playing the RRM1 and going like, I know we've mentioned it so many times, but damn, I really want one of those guitars. So cool.
It was very cool indeed. Now, did you get a chance to see? It was, of course, Glastonbury over the weekend as well. Did you get to watch much of that?
I saw a little bit of the headliners,
right.
And I thought, so I watched a bit of Billie Eilish. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Billie Eilish just like a ridiculous rise to like superstardom, and I like Billie Eilish as a person. I think she's, you know, she's really she's like quite a good activist for things like animal rights and stuff like that, which is, you know, I sort of think is really good. And I like some of her music, but I honestly thought the stage performance was a bit weak. Phineas, her brother, was playing a custom shop telly for a bit of it, which I thought was quite cool.
I did see that as well. That was really nice, like a charcoal frost.
Yeah, it was like a charcoal frost, like humbucker. It's like 72 telly, which I thought was pretty good. So I watched a bit of that, and I don't know her music well enough to kind of like be like, you know, super into it or not. Saw a bit of Macca, yes. Which
that was great.
It was really good. I mean, the songs were great. There was
the guest that he had on, you know, to see him with Bruce Springsteen and Dave Grohl.
Ridiculous.
Know, it was like one of those things, you know. I was watching that live. I went over to my friends who live near Glastonbury, actually. But we were just, you know, hanging out for the weekend. We were watching some of the Macca set at the end of night. And I was just, you know, I remember being like, wow, this is something we will never see again. There will never be stars like this again. with this sort of legacy and heritage in rock and roll on a stage like this. What an amazing thing to get to witness.
Yeah, and I mean, the dude's 80. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I think he's still got so much in life and enthusiasm in him, and it's great, and the music's all really good. So it was good seeing that. I always loved the drummer for Paul McCartney. Just that big dude just plays that, like, that massive, like, it's got a massive, like, 28-inch kick or something like that. I remember some of the old ones just plays this huge kick. And just a great band.
Their bass player is an Ashdown artist.
Right. I can't remember the name of the guitar player, but the guitar player also plays a bit of bass sometimes, but again, just like ridiculous kit, you know, like...
Brian Ray, who is the bass player. Yeah, he's the bass player who, obviously, he plays guitar when Paul's playing bass, but he's an Ashdown artist when he's playing bass.
Yeah, I saw like a kind of, I think Gibson TV did something on him and going through his guitar collections, just like... ridiculous. And then I saw a bit of Kendrick Lamar, which I love Kendrick Lamar. The new album's amazing, and the guy is just a master poet. It's amazing, but I was really disappointed. I thought it was really boring. I think it's always difficult. It must be difficult for people that are in that kind of rap hip-hop thing, if they decide not to have a band, to like do something that is as impactful, you know, because, you know, I think when, you know, you saw like Rabia play on stage with Stormzy, and then, you know, at Reading, what, last year, whatever. Yeah. And then he had a whole band for like the whole gig, and like all the music was live. And then, like, yeah, you see Kendrick Lamar, and he's, you know, probably the biggest rapper in the world, and it's just him on stage. And, you know, it's good and it's bad. But I also think that some of the production and some of the kind of nuances of the music's a bit lost, but that's just me.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, but I didn't see anyone else. What about you, Joe? Did you catch anyone sort of special? Any other guitars?
Not really. Just because, you know, it was obviously live on the day, and I think I was out drinking and playing golf all day. Actually, with the guitarist from Chioda Coup, who I spoke to, Charlie Barnes from Chioda Coup, who I spoke about a few weeks ago, who I saw at Porter's Festival in London. He's the guy who plays a twin. And uses a rat distortion as his main drive pedal, and just makes the most incredible guitar sounds I've ever heard. Has this gorgeous, like, weird, sunburst telly, but it's an odd burst. It's like it's got some orange in there at the core, like some real something really vibrant. It's I've never seen a finish like it. And it's got a Strat neck on it, which he popped on himself. But, you know, like his gear, he's one of those people where I love Charlie, he's a good friend, but I can't really talk to him about gear, because what he's interested in is being a really great player.
Ugh, and boring.
Making great sounds. Like I spoke about this a few weeks ago, but you know, he's one of those guys that has become an expert with the gear he uses. Like his delay pedal, one of the controls is broken off. So in between songs, when he needs, the tap doesn't work and the speed control has snapped off, so he has to use a screwdriver in between songs to put it in the pedal to move it. it's stuff like that, and he just doesn't care, but still is one of the best guitarists I've ever seen. So I was there with him and also Kerry Funnell. She's the bass player in No Violet, who's a band that I've spoken about a bunch. She plays actually one of those Flea 62 style stack pot jazz basses. But yeah, so my point was, we played golf and got really drunk, so I didn't see a lot of it, just caught the end thing. But one of the bands that looks like they did go down very well and were mentioned on the Facebook group, Guitar Nerds group on Facebook, Wet Leg. Because Wet Leg's bass player was, for the first time, playing his Trent Guitar's signature bass.
Yeah, I although I'm not really on social, I did see that, and it looked wicked. Again, a meteoric rise to fame for that band. They're sort of just underground to, like, you know, proper, like, big gigs pretty damn quickly.
And a really great tasting gear, really nice, interesting guitars that they use as well. But the bass especially was fantastic. I don't know how Trent guitars managed to get those finishes, because of course they do really, it's all like eco stuff.
It's vegan, I think, isn't it?
It's vegan. All vegan and eco. And so the paints, they're like almost sparse large flake glitter is the only way I can describe them.
Mm.
But they just look so good. This particular one was in like a gorgeous sort of almost vibrant Lake Placid. I don't really know what the official name for the colour was, but it's his new bass shape, which has like just a Mustang pickup bang in the middle. It was short scale. The bass player himself used to play those JMJ road-worn Mustang basses before.
Oh, so
it's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
kind of it's quite a similar kettle of fish there. But it looked absolutely fantastic. And I love that completely unknown... Now, even though, obviously, Trent have been a brand that we've spoken about a bunch on the podcast, someone brought it up on the group being like, wow, see the Wet Legs bass, that thing looks amazing, without knowing it was Trent.
Ah, nice.
So, you know, it's cool that I think that instrument, that body shape and that brand are resonating with people, you know, whether you're already aware of them or not. They seem like a... And they're going from strength to strength, so, you know.
Yeah, I think it looks great. And again, I scrolled through Facebook, saw the pink one again. I was just like, oh, man.
Oh, do you mean the bass? Oh, do you mean the guitar?
The pink guitar. I think they just put a post on there or something, probably from ages ago, considering how little I checked Facebook. And I was like, it does look so good. So good.
It does look very good indeed. Now, speaking of custom builds and custom brands, it's almost like, I don't know, 18 months, maybe longer, maybe 2 years ago, I can't remember. I commissioned, after having the chap on the podcast, I commissioned a Moore Guitars bass. And that is very much underway at the moment. I've started to get my updates, so I'm at the top of the queue. So, so my Denmark-made Wayfarer is on its way.
Oh, man. That's going to be... because that's like super... Because he has definitely made basses, isn't he? Yeah, I can see basses on here. But yeah, I think... Is it a different body shape to the one that's on his website then? Is that...
Oh, I didn't see if there was one on the website. Moore Guitars, M-O-A-R, dear listener, if you want to check them out on Instagram, or it's mooreguitars.com if you want to have a little butchers. And he does a handful of shapes. And the one I've gone for is the Wayfarer. I don't know. I'm just checking the bass thing. No, so on his website, if you go to bass there, neither of those basses are what I've commissioned. I have commissioned the guitar shape, which is the Wayfarer, which is the 335 style large super slim hollow body.
That's the one that I would pick, I think. That is super cool.
It's very cool. It stands out. I love it. I love how big it is. It's got huge Mickey Mouse ears, but it's all wafer thin, and I'm just really into it cosmetically. So yeah,
did you put a Bigsby on it?
Oh, I've missed a trick. Oh, there's still time, Matt. There's still time.
Base Bigsby.
I have gone for a tailpiece, but it is obviously not a Bigsby on there. But what?
What scale length?
Originally, I commissioned him for a 30-inch, but because what I did was, at the start of lockdown, you know, there were no gigs. I convinced myself that short scale was for me. I bought, like, my Fender Music Master. You know, I had the thing with the Broncos. I got Fidelity to make me a 30-inch scale bass. You know, mm-hmm. I had all these short scales. And then when it actually came to sort of gigging them with Polymath, I was like, even with the ridiculous 65 to 120 strings that I commissioned from Stringjoy, I was like, it doesn't work. You know, the strings don't resonate like at the tunings, that being that thick a string on that shorter neck, it doesn't work. You know, everything sounds muted. So I gave up on that. I've got Fidelity cutting me a new neck at a 34 inch scale at the moment. So I went back to Moore and I said, can I change this? And they were like, yeah, we haven't started the neck yet. So that's fine. So it will be a 34 inch scale neck. With a tailpiece, 3 bass P90s that he's built himself.
Wow. So custom wound just for that bass.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In these cool, like, grill topped but P90 dog eared sides, P90 housing. So 3 of those. And the controls, I'm just going to have a single volume and then bass 6 style. Or, you know, Jaguar style control. So it's just like an on off for each individual pickup, which would be cool.
Cool. But, so when's the expected arrival date?
It should be finished by the end of July, I think. So very, very soon. Also, I'm having no F-holes on mine, which is cool.
Is it still hollow or...?
It's still hollow, but yeah, there's no F-holes. There is actually, there's going to be a sound hole cut into the top of it just to keep some of those tonal characteristics, but it shouldn't affect feedback in the same way. So we'll see. I'm excited. We're kind of nearly there. It's so long ago that I commissioned it, so it's sort of gone to the back of my mind. Oh, I'm having it all done in Wenge, by the way, just because if I could choose, I'd have it in black, like a painted finish. But that's not more. Don't do that sort of thing. So I've just gone for the darkest wood possible. And then if I want to refinish it, maybe I'll get it refinished. I'm not sure yet.
Right. So already thinking, maybe I'll just paint it a different colour.
yeah, God, I'm useless, but I'm excited. It's going to be a cool, interesting, very, very different guitar, and adds to my custom build collection. I need to just get this one and pay for this one, and then take some downtime because this one's quite expensive. Just because I've been talking to Trent as well about them doing like one of their basses, but in a 34-inch scale with two Mustang pickups, and in their sort of sparkle charcoal frost. Oh, that would be great, but I need to have a gap in between. Well, this moor,
just following on from circling back round to your question of what guitar would I buy,
yes, your guitar that you can buy with your money.
Well, because you mentioned Moore and Trent, I was like, oh, maybe I'll do a custom order. And then, I have to say sorry to those guys, because Guitar Village have just listed for pre-order 10 custom shop Gretches, not available yet, they're coming. And some of the models are simply, someone's hacked my brain and built, commissioned the custom shops that I would buy. So I'm going to give you a quick rundown, Joe. From there is no best to worst, because they're all good. I'm going to pick out my favorites. Gretsch custom shop, G6199 reverse Billy Bow in black sparkle.
Oh my god.
Which looks absolutely ridiculous.
That is extreme.
Yeah.
Where can listeners find these?
So if you head over to guitarvillage.co.uk, tiny little guitar store in Farnham in the Surrey countryside, they are currently listing that. That's one of the cheaper ones. Gretsch Custom Shop G6136T Falcon Relic in Sonic Blue. And that's the model with the Bigsby, the TV Jones in the bridge, and the Dynasonic in the neck, which is the spec. That is awesome. They've also got, and I'm leading up to the killer one here, so they've got a Gretsch 6136 1954 specs. That's two Dynasonics, White Falcon Relict, with no Bigsby. That's the hardtail.
Oh yes, that is awesome. That's what I want.
In a slightly more affordable, slightly still very expensive though, Gretsch Custom Shop 6134 1958 spec White Penguin Relic. And I'm just looking at that going, oh. And then Joe, the cherry on the cake. And this is just, it's so much money. Gretsch Custom Shop 6134T59 triple H Penguin Heavy Relic in Shell Pink.
I just found it.
That's it. That's a three TV Jones. White. I mean, that is a pink penguin. That is the dream.
That is
$8,144. Nine of your great English pounds.
That is an awful lot of money. It looks absolutely incredible. I love that it's got the three where a pickup selector would be, there are instead three switches there.
Yeah.
I don't know what they'll do. Are they just on off?
I think there must be on off for each pickup.
Oh, it looks amazing. It just looks like an overloaded, like a 50s, modded guitar.
If I could afford £611 a month for a year, I would probably just smash down the interest free on that. To be fair, you can buy on classic credit for £230 a month over 3 years. You know, all very tempting. But the I can't believe I've just seen how much the relict Sonic Blue Falcon is. It's 11 and a half grand. Oof.
That is a lot. That is a lot of money.
That is. God knows how long they've been on order as well.
Well, it says that they're coming in October of this year, dear listener. So, you know, it's not like you'd even have to wait a long time to get them if you want to. Parting with this sort of money.
I sent a link to Amy. It's just like, if we sell the house, can I buy this?
You definitely could, but, though, Matt. It's probably the only time that you could, I'm saying. That you should.
I think the funny thing is if I sold all of the guitars I own, I still don't think I'd have enough money to buy that Pink Penguin.
Well, I don't know. You'd probably just about make it. I have never seen a reverse Billy Bow before. I can't believe how cool they look.
I know.
It looks fantastic.
I know. It looks great.
Dear listener, I assume you're familiar with the Billy Bow shape. It's so much less common than anything else, really, that Gretsch do. But actually, for me, reversing the body shape fixes a big problem, which is that you can't really sit with a Billy Bow because the lower horn on a normal Billy Bow cuts away almost at the same rate that a Flying V does before it sort of resets into the relatively normal rest of the body shape. So it does make it quite difficult to sit with. Reverse means you actually get a lower horn. This makes it a much more functional guitar for me, and it looks 10 times cooler. And because even that upper horn really wasn't that much of an impact on access, you don't really lose any more access than you'd have on, say, a Strat or something. I think it looks absolutely fantastic.
To be fair, the same place, Guitar Village, at the moment do have a 6120, which is the kind of more classic Gretsch shape, which is normally in orange, which someone's refinished in black, which looks very cool. It's very, like, I don't know, it's got Johnny Cash vibes on all that black finish. But yeah, some great, you never see, in the UK especially, custom shop Gretsch stuff.
This shop is wonderful.
It's a great shop. It's a great shop. They really, you know, found their... It's a very small shop. It's in a very old building. But yeah, they kind of have their niche. And they always have a lot of good pre-owned stuff in there. And then they did once have in there... They had a Martin ukulele from like 1880 or something ridiculous. And I was like, that's cool. I was like, I'm not really much of a ukulele player, but you know, I thought that would be very cool, very very cool. I think when we were talking to Ken last week, and he was saying about brand history, and I was like, yeah, Martin, you forget like 150 years or whatever, and you're like, you can buy some seriously old Martin acoustics.
Yep.
Not that you see that many, but
No, you don't, as long as, you know, they're getting smashed up in Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think that they said, didn't they say they'd never lend another guitar to anyone ever?
Yeah. Yeah. Poor Kurt Russell. He's such a lovely man.
Yeah, I know.
He felt terrible.
Kurt's lich. I think he's a guitar player as well, if I remember.
Is he? Oh,
I
no.
I think so. Yeah, I'm sure. He's like one of those people that's, kind of sort of an old guitar, you know, hero. It looks like the oldest Martin is actually in their museum, 1834. Right. It's the oldest existing American guitar in the world.
Ooh, blimey.
How about that? Blimey. Don't smash it.
No. I'm looking at stuff on Guitar Village now. I've never been to this website. I mean, I know you've spoken about them before on the podcast, or I think you have, but I've never been to this site. They've got some great stuff. I'm looking at their Fender Custom Shop options here. There's a pre-owned Fender Custom Shop Masterbuilt, Greg Fessler Masterbuilt, released for NAMM 2018. It was a limited edition F-hole Stratocaster in relic pink paisley.
Oh, wow. I like it.
With two P90s banging in the neck and the bridge, and then just two controls, just one volume tone, and then the traditional five-way, but I assume it's a three-way. It looks absolutely amazing. $5,999. So not too bad. $6,000 for something that unique.
Yeah. Well, talking of Paisley, just briefly, maybe more on this next week. I finally decided to get my 80s Paisley Strat with a full setup and proper checkout. I haven't played it for ages, and I think I put some saddles on it that we got sent at some point. They were like non-pressed saddles, so like they don't dig into your hand. I think, yeah, I messed around with it. The guy I took it to said there was like very little movement left in the truss rod. I think it needed like some fret work. The electrics were a bit... I put like a James Homotone solderless system in. It was very good for fitting stuff in, but I don't think I fitted it properly, so it was noisy. So I've just kind of taken it for a kind of bit of a full TLC.
Sweet. So wicked. So you've got it back now, and it's all...
No, I'm going to get it back tomorrow. So yeah, maybe more next week when I've played it. And because I put ages ago I bought the tiny Gilmore trem arm for it, I've also put some Gilmore strings on it. You know, if you've got to have a Strat, you've got to get it set up like Dave Gilmore. So
I guess so. Oh, that's very cool. I would be excited to hear that back out and about. It's the only sort of vintage-ish guitar that you own.
Well, yeah, it's just basically as old as me, which is bizarre. But yeah, just those things are going up in crazy value now. Do you know what I mean? That's the 60 stuff, 70 stuff becoming unobtainium for a lot of people. And I guess, yeah, again, a generational thing. It's what you grew up with, you know, and stuff from the 80s and the 90s, you know, where people have got a bit more disposable income of that generation are now going, yeah, that's the stuff I want. Drives demand, puts the price up.
That's it. That's why, you know, we've said it before, but that's why the Mark Hoppus P-Bass that used to be 400 quid is now $1,000 on Reverb, you know.
So, I mean, it was the thing, the day before the Chili's concert at London Stadium, it was the Hella Mega Tour, which was Green Day supported by Fall Out Boy and Weezer. And I'm just like, you know, but again, Green Day, one of those bands where like you got the audience of like all age ranges.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's
and like, he's got a new signature model now, his new affordable Epiphone Junior in white.
Oh, really? I hadn't seen that. Was it talked about on the pod maybe when I wasn't
can't remember.
Here?
I think, I'm not sure, maybe. I think, you know, yeah, it's, you know, new headstock. So it's got like the nice Epiphone headstock. I think it comes in a case as well, which is quite nice, even though it's an Epiphone.
They must be literally shoving them out the factory door. They probably cannot make them quick enough.
I'm sure it's one of those guitars that it almost immediately will go for more secondhand than it.
Absolutely. I mean, damn, they're great guitars. And I mean, the actual, you know, the Gibson ones, so good. So good.
He's had a great range of, for someone, you know, who you know, became famous playing a Fernandez Strat-alike, he's had a great slew of Gibson signature models, you know, some really weird ones. Do you remember that weird one he had? Because he had his junior. I think he had a couple of juniors, didn't he? He had like a Sunburst junior, which was just like a junior. The only thing that was defining about it was that it came in a case with like leopard print, you know, inside lining.
Yeah.
And then he had the white one, which had some sort of Green Day symbol on, I don't know, a skull and crossbones or an X or something on the body. And then he had something, was it like a...
an ES-137.
That was it. So weird. I was like, I remember when it came out and I was like, I didn't even know there was a 137. You know, it was so off the beaten track.
Yeah, it was, that's the one with like the Florentine cutaway. So the kind of sharp cutaway and stuff like that. A strange choice. A strange choice. Didn't play it for that long. And then I think he still does play it live, but it's certainly, you know, not as iconic as the junior, really.
Yeah, that has become super, super iconic. Very cool. Very cool indeed. Now, you actually, Matt, you got something pretty vintage the other week. I think we did speak about it, didn't we? You bought... I can't remember what it was. I can't remember what the product was.
So I bought a Line 6 Echo Pro, which is the rack-mounted DL4, owned by none other than Ed O'Brien of Radiohead. And when we spoke on this, you said, you know, what if it got some sounds on it, what things would you like, when would you have liked to be used? And I was like, I would like for it been used during Hail to the Faith. And then I got a nice card from Mr. Ed O'Brien that says, "Hello, new owner of my old Echo Pro. You know how good these machines are. They are a living. They are an unsung classic. I bought these in 2002, and they are in my touring rack for the Hail to the Faith tour in 2003. Thanks."
Yeah.
And I plugged it in, and they're definitely his presets. Because the first 10 presets, I'm like, Line 6 wouldn't have programmed those presets. They're just, they're very, how would I describe it?
Washy, ambient?
No, they're very, it's like really reflective. So loads of repeats really quickly. Do you know what I mean? Right. And I think it makes me think of some of the guitar sounds he definitely had later on as well, I think have been sort of, but it's got that, the whole unit, presets or whatever, it sounds amazing. It really does just sound really good. Like, awesome. And I had one before, and then I was impressed, and then obviously I sold it because I was like, oh, how do I incorporate it into my rig? But it is, I guess, I would say instantly musical. Like, you just find a preset or you find an algorithm and you're just like, it just sounds really, really, really good. And I think he moved more recently onto Strymon Timelines. Again, probably because pedal-based and MIDI, and there wasn't really much. I guess at 2003, like, what pedals were you using on the floor that had MIDI?
Exactly.
There's one preset that's like reverse delay, and I was like I've heard him use, he must have used that before. One of them I'm almost certain is a delay sound he must use for the Pyramid song, because it's super glitchy. And I'm pretty sure he's like, there's something running through that at some point, but I don't know specifically. But yeah, the first 10 or so presets, at least 10 or so presets, I'm like, they're not factory presets, they're definitely his. But it was great to like play around with those sounds, assuming that they are his, but kind of get an idea of maybe what he's doing on guitar. Because I think there's interviews with him saying, like, you know, when they did Kid A and Amnesiac, he was like, we were suddenly in a band with no guitar player, realistically. And he's like, how do you turn the guitar into like a more sonic instrument, as it were? So I definitely, there's a lot of textural stuff in some of the early presets that kind of add to, I guess, what he was doing at that time.
I mean, definitely that's what I think about him as a player, kind of an unsung hero himself, really. What he does is create amazing texture.
Absolutely. And then it just made me really want an Ed O'Brien Strat.
And I was like, they were very good.
They were. Well, you can still get them. I wasn't sure
if they were still current.
I wasn't sure if they were discontinued or not, but not everyone sells them. It looks like some of them are on order. Maybe I'll have
to. What was the deal again with the Ed O'Brien Strat? It had the Sustainiac. Or it wasn't a Sustainiac, was it? It was a Sustainer.
No, it's a little 59 in the bridge, Texas Special in the middle, and a Sustainer in the neck.
That's right.
21 jumbo, narrow jumbo frets and a 10 to 56 V-shape neck. Because we had one, didn't we? We borrowed one from Jay.
Yeah, it was a super thick neck. Yeah, that's right.
And I'm just looking at it now going, yes, that is the guitar I want. Where can I buy one? Show me where I can buy one. Show me where I can put one on a credit card. Great guitar. And yeah, a great bit of kit. Like, I think we've never really underestimated the power of the Line 6 DL4. And I've got a DL4 as well, and it just instantly sounds wicked. But there's something, about, I think I like the fact about this. I can't remember if there was extra algorithms on it. No, I think it's the same. I think it's the same algorithms. I mean, the one thing that's great about this is that you can have the problem with the pedal. Although the convenience of being a pedal is that you could either be on the loop sampler, or you could have three presets of the delay algorithms.
Of course, yeah. But you're choosing between.
But you could have one or the other. So a lot of people just used it as a looper. With this, you can save the looper as a preset and then recall it over MIDI, and then you can use a MIDI controller to then obviously like loop. So that's pretty cool. So
you have full access to everything that the DL4
offers. And the DL4 looper is not the best looper if you're trying to write songs and stuff like that, but you know, if you're trying to do...
No, it's not for that, is it? It's a glitch looper.
No, yeah. I mean, you know, Dave Nissen of Minus the Bear is just like the ultimate user of that product. You know, it's just like, it's a creative tool because of its limitations, not because it's a great looper.
Go on.
I was going to say, which sort of leads on to the other delay product I was going to talk about in the news, really, which was the Chase Bliss Habit.
Yeah. I want to talk about that. Just before we talk about the Habit, how are you going to use the Line 6
delay
product? What are you going to do? Are you going to rack mount it into your desk so it's something that you can access to record with? Because you don't really have a rack setup anymore that's outside of that. Like, you don't have, you know, you've got kind of just traditional-ish valve amps and cabs now.
Maybe, Joe, that's what I need to go back to when I've got the space. Because at one point I did have a bit of a rack fridge, I guess. But for this, so what I'm doing at the moment, without diving too deep into the pedal board, my whole pedal board effectively runs like mono. But what I do is I split one side just after the drive pedals, and that runs into one side of the CXM reverb, and then the other side runs through an RE202 into the CXM, and then one side runs out into direct into an amp, and another side runs out into the microcosm. But I've effectively got two signals, and I'm like, and I was running it in stereo yesterday going, it sounds so good in stereo. So what I might do is just run out of the board with the two outputs into the back of the Line 6, and then just run straight into the front of the two amps, and then just buy... The only thing is because those units are so shallow, they're only about 5 inches deep. So it doesn't really sit under an amp or on top of an amp because it doesn't really have any legs. So I thought about buying just a shallow rack case and sitting it underneath my two amp heads, and then, basically running it in stereo and just messing around with it. I think that's why I just want to have a bit more space, because I just want to be able to have everything to hand, I guess, and like plug more stuff in and just experiment more with sounds. But I don't know. I definitely want to use it more, because the reason I sold the last one is because it was just sat there and I was like, I could probably sell this for money. and then didn't sell it for a lot of money and then instantly regretted it. So, you know, want to make sure that I don't have to sell this one through lack of use.
Yes, you need to get solidly involved in this. Well, I will look forward to seeing how you get on with it and what you do with it. Now, we were going to talk about the Habit, the other delay pedal that you've been trying out recently.
So you sent this to me a couple of weeks ago, and I've sort of been really tied up until sort of today, really. And
So we're getting very much first impressions.
Yes, I'm confused. It's not bad. I will start by saying it is not bad in any way, shape, or form. It just highlights how insane they are, but also just how creative they are. Because I think on the surface of it, I don't think you can explain what this pedal really does. And I think a lot of people go, it's another glitchy delay pedal, or, oh, you just buy a blooper. It's basically the top three controls are a normal delay. If you just look at it, like, the top three controls are level, repeats, and delay. And the delay goes from like 40 milliseconds to 60 seconds. like 60 seconds. I mean, just absolutely bonkers.
all on one rotary sweep.
All on one sweep as well. And then the bottom controls, you've got six modifiers. So one of them's like a tape style delay, adds in loads of noise and glitches. One's like speeds things up by four times or reverses it. So you've got things that like change the delay.
Yeah. And they're almost like flavors or added bits. Yeah. Like they're like an olive or a slice of cucumber in your drink. Think of those.
Exactly. So you can add those to taste. And then your scan and spread. So if you turn scan all the way down, spread basically adds another delay. But as you turn up the scan, it effectively like adds in random points of anything you've played within the last 3 minutes. So it's sort of like
it's absolute so madness.
Every now, especially when you're just, this is the thing, when you're messing around with it and then you turn it up, you basically just get a load of garbage, especially if you're just like junk, you know, tuning up or whatever, and you sort of forget, it just throws a bunch of garbage back at you, which is really annoying. But I guess I think this pedal is, there's some instant gratification in it by reading their excellent manual. It's this great like thick card, like really graphic manual. It's great. And to get started, and the basic delay sounds are great.
It's very good because the manual kind of lets you introduce a control at a time almost. And it's like, here's how you can get a basic delay sound.
Yeah, exactly.
Now let's add this to do this. Now let's add this. It's very good.
Yeah, it's very much like, it takes you through step by step. And I think that's needed because I think if you just plugged it in and unlike a normal delay pedal, if you just twiddled knobs, you'd be very lost and very confused very quickly. So I think, from an instant delay point of view, sounds very good. And the modifiers really add some nice touches. From a usability point of view, like how you would use it on a pedal board, I don't know. Yeah, is the honest answer. I've watched some great videos, like they talk about building a song and you know using like a drum machine and then playing guitar parts and giving yourselves effectively, it's got a 3 minute looper in it because it obviously always scans over 3 minutes and then a 60 second delay of which you can run both at the same time. But there's no like visual indication or easy way of doing stuff
without a screen attached. It's those sorts of things can't, and it's not designed to be used in a precision sense.
No, I think if you sat down with it a long time and you worked out what you were doing with it, and I think if you've got like a synth or a guitar and you're in the studio and you're trying to come up with something creative, that's wicked. And I think if you used it a lot, I'm sure you could get some great, and I'm going to have a bit more of a play around with it. If you're after a pedal that does the weirdness and the glitchiness and the ambient stuff, and it's far more instant and every knob does something really instant and cool, then I think the Mood is a better choice.
Really, right?
Because okay. I think the Mood, you've got basically a reverb and a delay on one side and a micro looper on the other, and the micro looper always gives you some glitchy weird stuff, and then the other side gives you some reverb, and you can kind of tweak stuff and like the clock.
Yeah, it's one side for functionality, one side for predictably glitchy
stuff. and the clock control in the middle basically is quantized, so it always goes between like fifths and everything sounds in tune, and it's very cool. I think if you want a more traditional looper, that's something that you could loop with but also get quirky, then that's where the blooper comes in. And then this, I don't know how it sits in the pedal board at the moment. Some of the, for me, I think it's amazing what it does, and I've only spent a couple of hours with it, so I need to dive deeper. For some of the glitchy stuff I got out of it, I was like, I'm getting the same sounds out of the microcosm at the moment. And then modulated digital delay sounds I'm sort of getting out of the H9 at the moment. Uh-huh. So I think what's great is it does all of that and gives you more quirkiness. So if you don't want the H9, say for example, you don't want something like the Microcosm, I think this would give you quirkiness. But what I like is that if you've got 3 minutes worth of recording, you can like manually scan through 3 minutes and like pick out a small point, and then you can like just get it to repeat those bits, and then you can use it as a bit of a looper, and you can modify some delay. I certainly want to try more of the like Frippertronic stuff, you know, using the 60-second delay. I think that could be quite cool. But yeah, I think definitely the pedal I've probably had to spend the most time with to get something out of it that you would step on and go, oh, that's cool for what I do. Right. Whereas things like the Mood, like straight away, is like there's a bit of a learning curve, but it's not so steep. I do feel that this has got a relatively steep learning curve once you've worked out that it does more than just be a delay. You have to read the manual. Honestly, I really think you have to read the manual, which is no bad thing, because I think, you know, Scott, who's like the designer there and very much this was his kind of, you know, baby, he knows exactly how it works inside out, and the manual is written in a very good way that takes you through all of that. I think if you just plugged it in, I think you would struggle instantly. Just because I think like you would turn the spread control up and you go, why is there another delay? And then you turn the scan control up and then something you played 30 seconds ago would suddenly like pop through the speaker. You know, because I noticed that I would, you know, do something really janky in a clean sound. And then I would play like, and I'd turn the fuzz pedal on and like bend a note and just, you know, just mess around. And then all of a sudden I'd just like hear it back like super loud and I'd be like, oh yeah, I don't want that. I don't want to hear that again.
Yeah, it's an absolutely nothing does anything like this, but which is amazing. But at the same time, you absolutely have to know what you're doing with this in order to get the right result.
Yeah, it's really, you know, we've talked about it, I think, a few times in the last few weeks, but it's just like getting to know the most out of the gear that you've got. And I definitely think like you could put that on a pedal board and it would be amazing. You just got to spend the time on how to use it. Really got to spend the time on how to use it.
Absolutely. Well, very soon we'll be doing a podcast with the Chase Bliss lot. So we'll have a chat with them then about it. And of course, you'll have had more time to familiarize yourself with the habit in that time. It'll be interesting to see how you get on with it over the next few weeks. Now, that is all the time we have on this week's episode. You can, of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds for an extra episode every week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue. $10 gets you a lot, plus I sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Chris Franklin and Smith, Kytopia of the band, and D.D. Sean, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, and Paul Corrigan. Alex Bogan, everybody, oh, Rob Nord, Big Scott O'Brien, and Mulcravin. Yeah, that's the story of the Patriots upon us like a guitar.
Yeah.